This is Caravan to Midnight, the John B. Wells program. Here is John B.
Conversation for this episode of Caravan to Midnight promises to be quite interesting. We're going to speak with a gentleman named Ole Damgaard. Let me tell you a little bit about him. He's an author, an international speaker, and a former journalist and investigator who has dedicated the last 30 years of his life to researching many of these global conspiracies. His main focus has been to find out the truth behind the assassinations of John F. Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, Martin Luther King Jr., John Lennon, and the Swedish Prime Minister, Olof Palme, and Lady Di, plus the terror attacks of 9/11, Norway, you remember the big shoot-em-up that occurred there, the Oklahoma City bombing, and the Boston Marathon bombing, or incident, if you will. Over the last 30 years, he's discovered links between all of these assassinations, which has led him to believe that the same people were involved in both the JFK and the Swedish Prime Minister's assassinations, as well as many other major events. The same global elite seem to have used the same skilled mechanics for decades to do their dirty work. Ole has been among key speakers at many international conferences, including outside the Bilderberg meeting in 2014, and has had the privilege of being a special guest on hundreds of programs such as Buzzsaw, The People's Voice, UK, The Richie Allen Show, Red Ice Creations, Sweden USA, Project Camelot USA, Veritas Radio, Anarchist Radio Mexico, The Real Deal with Jim Fetzer, No Lies Radio with Dr. Kevin Barrett. He's also had articles published on prominent websites such as Veterans Today. In addition, he's very busy with a series of documentaries aiming at exposing many of the false flag operations that are currently hitting modern society. Without further ado, here he is, Ole Damgaard. Good to have you with us. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you so much, John. It's an absolute honor to be on your program.
It says former investigative journalist. Why former? Did you?
It's a good question. I feel almost ashamed of calling myself a journalist because when I see who are calling themselves journalists nowadays, they're not doing their job at all. So I am. It's not a term that I'm proud of, but I think at the same time, a real journalist is what people like you and I are doing. I just say former because I don't work as a journalist anymore.
I understand. Well, now can we now? If there's anything that you don't want to talk about, just we just won't. I mean, I'm not going to ambush you with anything. We don't know each other that well, but we'll know each other quite well by the time we've gone through our chat.
And feel free to ambush as well. If I don't know things, I'll just tell you. I have no idea. If I know, I will tell you.
Okay. Well, let's put it this way. Being an investigator can be dangerous, can't it?
Yeah. That's an understatement.
Yeah. If you can or wish to amplify any of that, it's okay with me. If you'd rather go on past it, that's fine. But when you and I were talking before the program, you indicated there had been some unpleasantness. And so it's one thing for me to tell people, listen, this is not what you think it is. This is not just what you may think it is. It's not just a question of sitting around, you know, and grinning at the camera when the little red light comes on and just pour out the schmooze. That's not what this is. I'm getting all kinds of stuff coming my way over the positions that I've taken on things that I don't go into it on the program because it's not going to help anything. He says, oh, poor Wells, you know, gee, they're really leaning on him. They're threatening him. It's like, that's just part of it. So, unfortunately, it's just part of it, particularly if you start getting close to something that might actually be true. That's when you're really going to get the blowback.
True. It's really scary at times. I feel like I'm living in a minefield almost because when you study many of these cases and you see the number of people that dies around these big conspiracies, it's horrendous. And unfortunately, I also had two friends in Sweden that was murdered due to our investigations into the assassination of the Swedish Prime Minister. And the thing is that at least I never know if I've stepped over the line before it's too late. You know, it really is like a minefield. You feel with your feet and you try not to push the wrong buttons. And then sometimes it just backfires right in your face, because the thing that the people behind these operations, the only thing they fear is the truth. That is the thing. So the truth, they will try and stop any way they can. So, well, what can I say? I've chosen this. It's not my job. It's just I've dedicated a major part of my life, put my family at risk and so on, had to move to another country and so on. But I'm very happy to do it because I can't see that we really have a choice.
Well, it's like I like to quote Dr. Paul Craig Roberts, and when he said, truth is always the enemy of the state, and seems to be completely true.
The powers behind so much mayhem in the world, I mean so much mayhem, the only power they have is because they're doing it very cowardly in the dark, behind hidden doors or closed doors or veils of all kinds of fog, so that we can't see what they're doing. And so what I try to do, that is also in the name of my website, Light on Conspiracies, I try to totally fearless aim the spotlight right at them, exposing what is going on in a non-violent way, but letting the truth do the job. Just find out the real truth and expose it. And with these false flags that I'm just ramped up in an incredible amount, what I try to do is also to do this while the operation is still ongoing, or even better, if I can be one step ahead and expose some of these planned massacres and so on before they even take place. So that is my dharma. That is what I devote my life to do.
Well, it's probably too early for you to have formulated anything, if you're even looking at this this incident that happened in Dallas, Texas, right down the road there, where we had five policemen shot by this this idiot who is affiliated with all kinds of I would say radical individuals of varying intensities. Have you looked at it at all? Because if you haven't, I would completely understand.
I tell you, if I can do a little name dropping here, because it's been an amazing few weeks, the last few weeks. We've had, as our guest in our house here, Max Egan, Sam Gardner, Ian Crane from England, Willem Velderhof, and Benny Wills from Joy Camp here as guests in my house. So I've been so into just hanging out with these guys and learning and so on. So when this Dallas thing happened, the thing with so many of these is that the quality of these operations is just going so, it's on such a low level that it's almost so you want to fall asleep as soon as you start looking into it. At the same time, when things like that happen, it's very, very important not to jump to conclusions, but really start digging into the real facts, what was going on, and not just the official story, but really try and find out and look evidence, witnesses, what they're saying, conflicting stories, things that don't add up, the location, the angles of the footage, who took the footage, all of these things before you make up an opinion about it. And this is too early, but I think it has a very distinct smell of a false flag once again.
Mm-hmm. How about this Orlando shooting? What are your thoughts on that? I've seen some of the stuff that popped up on YouTube. They're showing a bunch of different names and companies that are based here all over the place as far as the ownership of the building and everything else. Then you hear that building won't hold 500 people, and then Judge Napolitano comes out on Fox and says nobody got shot. There wasn't any gunfire until after 5 in the morning, but though that contradicts the initial report. So what do you make of this?
One thing, it was 300 people, not 500 people, that is claimed to have been in there.
All right, gotcha.
The thing, no disrespect, but the facts need to be straight. But every time there is a Bilderberg meeting, I hope your listeners are aware of the Bilderberg group, which is part of the world shadow government and part of messing us up big time, I would claim. Every time, more or less, when the Bilderberg meeting takes place, there is some kind of distraction taking place, some kind of terror event or bomb going off or something that divert the attention of the media to another direction. And For instance, in 2013, there was a so-called beheading of an English soldier in Woolwich in southern London, when the Bilderberg meeting was taking place just north of it. Just a few days before, boom, this happened. They claimed that two black Muslim guys chopped the head of an English soldier. And then instead of media going to the Bilderberg meeting, trying to access information about these extremely important meetings, what's going on behind these locked doors, suddenly all focus were on that. And it's many, many years things like this has happened. The more we look at this group, the more of these things. So this year, the meeting was in Dresden in Germany, and I and other researchers was just waiting, okay, so where's it going to happen? Where's it going to happen? And boom, Orlando, at the exact time. So the whole attention, once again, was pulled away from the Bilderberg meeting towards in my humble opinion, totally staged attack. I'm not saying that no one died there. I don't know, but there are so many things that is totally wrong with this thing, if you compare the official story with evidence that comes forward. So if you want to talk about Orlando, I'd be most happy to. I've been very digging very much into it.
Well, let's do it. Just take it wherever you want to go.
The thing is, with so-called false flag operations, a false flag is when, it's an old naval term, and it came in the old days where, you know, like countries like Spain or England or Holland went all around the world, rape and plunder, that type of tactics. But sometimes it was not in their interest to look as a bad guy because of trade agreements and other stuff. So what they did was if they wanted to invade a small innocent country or whatever, what they did was they put the enemy's flag on one of their own ships, then let their ship attack themselves, so that they, instead of being the attacker, they said, oh my God, we're under attack, we need to defend ourselves. And then they went in, total rape and plunder. And the countries around them were applauding them. Oh, thank God, you're such heroes to be able to handle such an attack. It's a very, very old tactic that has been used for decades and centuries. I would say most probably thousands of years as well. Because there's that one, the false flag operation, but there's also a very old Roman template called problem, reaction, solution. This was, I think it was the old Romans that came up with it. The whole concept is, how can an elite few, or at least they call themselves the elite, but a small group of people that sees themselves as better than the rest of us, how can they get the masses under control? How can they get the rest of us to act as slaves and just bend over and accept whatever they do? The answer to that question is through fear. It is only through fear that they can control us. So over centuries and centuries, they have created fake enemies, boogeymen out there in the dark saying, boo, so that we will go totally into fear mode, not thinking, just reacting emotionally. Oh my God, we're under attack. And then we turn towards the people that we think are there to protect us, not understanding that it's actually them who created the problem. And then we say, please, please help us. We need protection. And then they will serve as the solution. And the solution every single time when it's one of these operations is that the normal person has to pay. Give up civil liberties, human rights, accept more and more militarized police, more and more unjust wars, more and more surveillance, body scanners, you name it. So problem, reaction, solution, extremely important to understand that concept when it comes to mass shootings and so-called terror acts. So I always look out for this recipe. It is almost like when you look at these false flag operations, it's almost like when you make a pie, you have a certain recipe. I mean, you can change the shape of the pie, the color, the taste, the smell, but otherwise than that, it's still a pie. And here it is the same that are recurring in Ottawa, as in Sydney, as in Australia, as in Brussels, as in Paris, as in Copenhagen, as in many of the cities in the States as well. It's built on the same script, and this is why they also look identical, more or less, identical. So the thing that what I do is I always look out for the ingredients. Are the ingredients there, the main ingredients? And so if you want to, I can just go through some of them, because this is what I've spent hundreds of doing in hundreds of interviews, trying to just give the normal person in the street the recipe so that they can start observing when this happens, and even better, become aware of it before the attack is actually carried out.
Wow.
So, do you want the recipe?
Yeah.
Okay, one of the main things that I love, because this is a major problem for them, is that they need a drill. They need to go out and announce a drill in the area. The reason for this drill is for them to be able to get vehicles in position, explosives in positions, crisis actors in position, frame the patsy in position so he can be shot or killed or blamed or whatever, shut off streets, corner off everything, get film crew in position and so on, because nowadays these so-called terror events are more or less solely aimed at going out through media and pumping fear through media. So what actually happens on location is not that important. It is how it is filmed and then presented through media. So the drill is something really to look out for. The drill will always be, well, tomorrow we're going to have a security drill for your protection because we so care about you. And then what it will look like is like a film set nowadays. They will shut off streets, they will get permission from the local authorities, the streets will be closed off, there will be police surveillance by police that don't know what is actually going on. There will be all kinds of strange vehicles coming in with explosives, smoke grenades, all of these type of things. They will also rehearse what's going to go down. This drill can be in a city nearby or on the exact location. I mean, when they blew up the government building in Norway, for instance, there was a drill going on with the exact theme as happened that ended 22 minutes before the actual thing went live. 22 minutes. You know, it's the same with the 7/7 bombings where they blew up the subway, four different subway stations and a bus. There was an active drill with the identical scenario going on. The drill just went live halfway through. And it was so absurd that many of the people involved, not knowing the whole scenario, they thought it was a drill. So there were police officers standing outside the subway stations, seeing people coming running out, blown to pieces, with blood everywhere, smoke and so on. And they were standing there, not helping them, thinking it was a drill, thinking, my God, it's incredible what they can do nowadays with makeup and so on. So this is the thing. These operations are also totally compartmentalized. So every single one only knows their little part, not the whole picture. That is of incredible importance for the people or the power structure behind these horrible things, horrible events. So the drill is the first one. Also, the patsy. There will be a patsy that within minutes will be pointed towards whatever boogeyman they prefer, whatever boogeyman is in the trend at that time, you know, the fashion at that time. In the old days, in the 60s, it used to be Russians or East German, Bulgarians. You can just see the Bond movies. Then there were no Muslim terrorists whatsoever. Then it came up to, I think it went, when the wall went down, the Iron Curtain and the wall in Berlin went down. For a while there, they didn't really know who to use as a boogeyman because the Cold War ended. There was no one real to blame anymore or to use as a boogeyman. So they tried the alien threat, didn't really work out. And then in on stage came the perfect patsy, the perfect boogeyman, the Muslim terrorist. Because it needs to work in media. You know, you need to be scared of that individual. And many people in Western Europe and the States and so on who don't have experiences of Arab countries or in people from the Middle East and so on, get easily scared by black eyes, big eyebrows, a big mustache, and not even knowing where the countries are. It's like Azerbaijan or Pakistan or Afghanistan. They have no idea where they even are. They know nothing about the Islam as a religion. And then when somebody is pushed forward through propaganda over years and years and years, If their name is also Abdul Karim Karunkara, it's so much easier for the normal person to accept the fact that he is a terrorist because of this whole composite of an individual put together as a terrorist. But John, I tell you, after all of these years that I looked into this type of mayhem, and I have been digging deep, I've been on location on I don't know how many of these operations, really, really looking into it, putting myself on the line. Also, I've been there with an undercover photographer. I mean, scary bits. And I have not, as far as I know, found one single terrorist that looks the way we are being told. The one with the balaclava, Kalashnikov, running around screaming Allah Akbar. I have not. The real terrorists in my world, they are the ones after these operations that come forward on the screen, in this black box in front of you, saying, "My God, our nation is under attack. We must stand united against this and not let terror, defeat us. We must stand united." And then comes their agenda. These are the real killers, the real people behind these horrible, horrible, horrible events and incredibly unjust wars and so on. Because they always have a solution. That is the thing. When these things happen, you will see nowadays when people's span of concentration is so short due to, well, whatever, they will serve you the problem, reaction, solution on screen right in front of you. So, for instance, we have a mass shooting. The mass shootings only happen in countries where there are lots of guns, where the regime wants to be able to control and take away the guns from the population. The only country I'm talking about, the States. That's more or less the only place where these things occur. In other countries, like even Sweden, when something like that happens, it's with a knife, so they're aiming for the knives and so on. But in the States, they want you to give up the weapons so that they can just move in and take over. So anyway, if it's a terror act or mass shooting or whatever, you will have a reporter with a witness. And in the background, you will have lots of blue lights and cars around, not showing anything at all, actually. It's most of the time it's dark, and you can just see, oh my God, something has happened. So the reporter, who's in on the whole thing, will interview a witness who is in the operation. So they will say, "So what happened? Did you see what happened?" And the witness will say, "Oh, it was awful. I saw all of these blown up children, women and children, to get the emotional impact. Old guys and cows or tractors, if they were blown up, doesn't work. It's women, children, nuns, nurses, missionaries, these type of things, to get the emotions going." Okay, so the reporter asks, the witness will then give you all of these details that will make the viewer go, "Oh my God, that's awful. Something needs to be done." And then, within seconds, the reporter will start talking about a possible boogeyman. Who are they going to blame it on? So within 20 seconds on something, there will be some kind of connection with ISIS or ISIL. They keep changing the name of this boogeyman. Daesh, or because Al-Qaeda didn't work anymore, so they needed to upgrade it, so they just created the ISIS out of thin air. Boom, there it came. A new boogeyman nobody had any idea of even existed until, whoop, overnight, there it was. Anyway, so there will be this connection to a known terror group, and then the reporter will say, "Well, due to this, my God," and then, what is it, either ban automatic weapons, or we need to install more security at the airports, or just listen. The next time a thing like this in Dallas, for instance, happened, listen to the script and see what you can make out of it. Problem, reaction, solution. I tell you, you will be surprised at how many times you will see that unfold right in front of you.
Wow, extraordinary.
So back to the... You want some more of the recipe?
Yes, definitely. Definitely, okay. Because if we have the recipe, then I think it'll make it a little bit easier for us to connect the proverbial dots as these events continue to happen, which I'm pretty sure they will. In fact, they're probably going to increase in number now over the next weeks and months.
Yeah, Because the thing is that they don't want us to focus, be able to focus on any of these ones. I mean, how many remember the Brussels airport? It's only a few months ago, but we, because of all this thing, boom, 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 boom. I have contacts within the CIA and so on. And in the old days, it used to be like one of these a year or every third year or something like that. Now it's what they call scare of the week. You know, boom, 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 boom. Just like being up against Cassius Clay, you know, do-do-do-do, jab, 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 so that you can't focus. You keep getting distracted. And for someone like me, it's extremely tiresome because I it's very hard to keep really digging into it because the next thing happened and the next thing happened and the next thing. Anyway, so you have the drill. You have a patsy. That patsy is totally innocent. The person they are blaming, totally innocent, but works well in media. He will look weird. He will have a strange haircut. They will all the time say, a lone crazy guy. This is the one they love. A lone crazy guy. And the reason why they want him alone, because then by law there's no conspiracy. A conspiracy is when two or more people are preparing criminal activity that will hurt the rest of us. So they want him alone, because then they can deal with him in a totally different way. And crazy, because no motive. He was just crazy. He went up and he killed the president, or he killed that, or he blew up the bomb because he was crazy. Okay, so in that case, if they can get him killed as well, on location, being alone, no conspiracy, no motive, as soon as this person that they blame is dead, case closed, thank you folks, good night, and we'll see you next time. So every time you hear lone crazy guy, whoop, wake up and see, hang on, before I'm going to buy into the official story, let me just check on what is going on here.
All right, Ole, this is remarkable. I'm just going to stay out of your way and let you just keep rolling. I'm just going
to. Please feel free to interrupt me at any time.
No, I will at some point, but not now.
Excellent. Okay, now another ingredient is that you've got now governments that spend billions of dollars for surveillance cameras because of all these terror activities that is claimed to be going on everywhere. Unfortunately, every single time something really happens, all the CCTV footage is shut off. Go figure. And the companies that I keep bumping into every single time there is one of these operations ongoing, it's ICTS. It's an Israeli connected company that is specialized especially in airports and train stations and other things. And every single time, the camera shuts down. So there's no real footage of what is going on. For instance, in Brussels, they said for once there was footage showing, wow, we had footage showing when the bombs went off. Very sorry, the footage that was released was from bombs in Moscow some 3-4 years earlier. So absolute fake, it was just put out there. Then another company is G4S or G-Force, which is where the claimed mass killer from Orlando is said to have worked for this. But this is the third biggest company in the world. I mean, it's massive, and more or less no one has heard of it. And these companies, I don't know about you, John, but if I'd had cameras installed for like thousands and thousands or even millions of dollars, and then every single time something happens, they don't work, wouldn't you fire them? But instead, what we see here is that they are just being used more and more and more and more. And then if there is footage at all of the claimed assassin or terrorist or whatever, they're blurred photos with sort of somebody's moving in the background. You can hardly see who they are, even though the cameras are digital HD most of the time, and you can't even make blurred images hardly with these type of cameras. Still, we get them blurred. And very rarely can you see who the person is. Anyway, so also another thing with these things is that the communication system for the police or for the SWAT teams and so on will shut down just before this happened. Suddenly, but for some reason, shut down. Happened at 9/11, happened at the mass shooting in Norway, at the government building in Norway, that as well. We've had several here in the States as well, where suddenly this happened and suddenly it doesn't work. at the Brussels airport, they had to use Facebook. I mean, we're talking about the police and military and so on had to use Facebook to communicate with each other. Same thing in Norway. And then also what is going on, it's very, very good to have a look at the stock market before these things happen and just see what happens right before the thing happens. You will be able to track if they haven't covered it up. You will see that they're insider trading going whoop, and then boom, it happens, and people have made billions. But what they also do is, as soon as there is a terror attack with their claimed victims, they say, oh, due to out of respect for the families of the dead, we will shut down, close the stock market for 3 days, and out of respect. But that has nothing to do with it. They use these 3 days to cover their track and get everything sorted. They lock down currencies, they do all of these insider trading and hide their track, open after 3 days, and nobody notices what happened. You will also often have, when these things happen, there will be airborne surveillance. You will have troops in the air, especially when it's like top assassinations and so on, just to be very sure that if there are riots or anything like that occur, that they can go down and stop it right away. So the timing of when it happens is also depending on when these things happen. Very often, if they're insider trading big time, it will happen on a Friday. For the same reason like before, that it's a good day to shut down the stock market. It will give them up till Monday for this to do in a natural way. They don't have to then explain why they have to shut down 3 days during the week. So very often it will happen on a Friday. You can take the JFK assassination, for instance, and check it out, the stock market. It went skyrocketed when Olof Palme, the Swedish, that was on a Friday. When Olof Palme, the Swedish Prime Minister, was killed on a Friday, the stock market in Sweden made almost the all-time high. These type of assassinations are big business. If you know it's going to happen, that's the whole secret. 9/11, check what was going on in the stock market. They made billions. And if it's a terror act against a building where there's a building involved, you have to check out the insurance things as well, because people are making billions there as well. 9/11, Oklahoma City, and so on. The bombings in different areas as well. So the tracks are there. Also, you will see that the normal investigation, if there is, for instance, a top assassination, the people, had it been when JFK was killed in Dallas, for instance, that went under the jurisdiction of in Texas. They should have be the one who took care of it, and the autopsy and so on. But instead, what happened, special teams of investigators move in and just knocks every normal, decent detective to the side. They take over the investigation. This is, I don't know how many countries I've seen the exact same thing happen, but what they do is the people behind the operation, move their people in position to do the investigation. But the only thing they do is they went that way, they went that way, they went that way. Anything except really looking for the real truth. They will pump out in media, it was the Patsy, it was the Patsy, it was the Patsy, and at the same time tracking down people like myself, who is like a pain in the butt, who will not give up and look into this. And then if there's enough pressure from the public saying like, my God, this is just not true, the official story and investigation is just absolute lies, I mean, how is this possible, then they will put together a commission, which is part of the crime. Very important to understand. The investigation, part of the crime. The commission, part of the crime. And they're only there to cover the whole thing up. Drag it out, drag it out, drag it out for a year or so, manufacturing like thousands of documents that says absolutely nothing except being a fantastic way to make people go to sleep because it's so boring. And then when they come with a report, the report will every single time say, well, the investigation made a mess, they made some minor mistakes, but they did what they could, and so thank you, and we've done an excellent job, and that's it. So you better forget about the whole thing. But if people still keeps asking for the real truth, then they will just put together a new commission. And the new commission will look into the first commission, and except none of them will look into the crime hardly at all. They are only looking at how was the investigation done. And in Sweden, like for with the Swedish murder of Olof Palme, there were four commissions over the years until people were just so fed up. They could not care less, even if the real truth was put in their face. I've written a book called Coup d'etat in slow motion, if I can show it.
It's yes, like please this. Do, yes.
It's almost 1,000 pages. The official story to this day is that it was a lone crazy guy that killed him. There are some theories surrounding the whole thing, but it was the Patsy. And the Patsy died later on. He died under suspicious circumstances. No motive, no reason. One of the theories is that he mistook the Swedish Prime Minister for his drug dealer because they had the same fur hat. Yeah, right. Okay. So after all of these years that I put into this, and with two friends dead and all of this, I put together a book. It's almost 1,000 pages called Coup d'etat in slow motion, in great detail, pointing everything out. Who were the getaway drivers, who were the backup shooters, who were the walkie-talkie men, who were the people in the police, who were in the investigation, who was in this, because this was a major, major, major conspiracy, international, with direct links, just like you said, mentioned before, to JFK and many, many, many other assassinations. And this is where I've come to spend many years tracking down a group that went under the name of Operation 40, a small group of top assassins that were put together in the early 60s, late 50s, early 60s. Under President Dwight Eisenhower, he met up with some old wolves from the CIA and big companies like Standard Oil, United Fruit, and so on. And what they were concerned, because they wanted to move out in the world and start conquering without having any problems. So somebody came up with the idea, why don't we put together like a super elite hit team that we can just use anyone that stands in our way, we can just get rid of them. So why don't we put together this team? Nobody would ever know about them, and we can send them right, left, and center anywhere in the world to take out people. So they thought, great idea. So Eisenhower gave the task to Richard Nixon, who was vice president at the time. So he contacted or joined up with people from the CIA. There were E. Howard Hunt, if I'm sure you recognize the name from Watergate and other scandals. He was also very deeply in the JFK assassination. Another one was Ted Shackley, the blonde ghost, the chief of JM Wave in Miami, and other major operations in Vietnam, in the whole war. Many of these things are connected. And the third one was David Attlee Phillips. David Attlee Phillips was later, both he and Ted Shackley were the director of covert operation for the Western Hemisphere. I mean, these are big, big players when it comes to these black things. And David Attlee Phillips was also the controller of no one less than Lee Harvey Oswald, the acclaimed shooter of JFK. Absolute lie. This Lee Harvey Oswald was actually a hero, I must say, big time, trying to stop the assassination. He was infiltrating the whole thing, trying to stop it, and got killed in the whole thing. He got too deep involved. But David Attlee Phillips was his controller, his CIA controller, and David Attlee Phillips was also the controller of James Files, that is the self-acclaimed shooter behind the picket fence, which I totally believe this man. He's still in jail, still alive. Anyway. But he was also the controller later in years of a man called Michael Vernon Townley, top assassin that was part of taking out Salvador Allende on 9/11, 1973. Many of these people from Operation 40 was down there doing it, but also present in Stockholm when Olof Palme was killed 23 years later. Anyway, Operation 40, if I reverse the tape back to the early 60s, what they did was that they went down to Miami, which was the main station for the CIA, the main office. I mean, it was massive in Florida. And what they did was they started recruiting exiled Cubans that had just fled from Cuba when Fidel Castro took over, because Fidel Castro was the first one they wanted to get rid of. So they recruited these people, most of them former military, police, security, and so on, violent people. And they put them together in this group called Operation 40. To start with, I believe there was around 70, 80 people in it. There was one woman, Marita Lawrence, a former lover to Fidel Castro as well. And about 60 of these 80 people were used and educated in anything from propaganda to infiltrating to blackmailing, all of these type of things. But about 20 of them were solely trained as assassins. They were trained in north of Lake Pontchartrain, north of Louisiana, New Orleans. They were trained in the Everglades in Florida and in Guatemala, in everything from poison to warfare to jungle warfare to bazookas to whatever could kill someone, they trained them in it. And once they got that team together, they started using it. They tried first with a beard, getting rid of Fidel Castro. They failed several times. And then after the Bay of Pigs and the missile crisis, the Cuban Missile Crisis, I believe that people, witnesses to that event, said that when JFK was sitting with his finger on the button, I mean, it was so close to the Third World War, a nuclear war, and the whole military industrial complex was sort of in the background just shouting at JFK, press the button, start the war, start the war. And at that point, JFK, witnesses have said that he had tears in his eyes just saying, I refuse to be the one that does this to the world. And after that, this is the turning point for JFK from being, I think at least, quite a flamboyant playboy that didn't really understand the severity of his position as president and the madness behind the plans of the New World Order. And after that, he suddenly became this very determined, very, very brave individual that faced the whole thing and said, we're out. We are going to stop this. We will change the world. We will free the world. He wanted to print their own currency, get out of the Federal Reserve Bank, the grip, the strangle grip from that whole thing. He wanted out of Vietnam. I mean, the Vietnam War hadn't even started, really, on the American part. It was a French war that was taken over by the Americans.
Yeah.
He wanted to crush the CIA into 1,000 pieces. There were many, many different... Also, he started a witch hunt on the mafia that had even helped him get in position through his dad. And he was pissing off a lot of people. So suddenly, from being their tool in the White House, or at least somebody they thought they could control, this guy was totally out of order, according to them. And so this weapon, Operation 40, was aimed at JFK instead. And when you look at the assassination of JFK, Dealey Plaza, I've spent many, many, many years trying to identify more or less everyone there, the shooters, the positions, who was behind the whole thing. It is also in this coup d'etat in slow motion, photos, names, everyone, the shooters, where they were, and so on. And many, many of them are part of Operation 40, which I find very interesting. But at the same time, this assassination was just like the murder of Julius Caesar. Everybody had to dip their hands in blood so that nobody could blame or point blamingly at anyone else.
It's just a big old global mafia, isn't it?
It's totally. This is the thing. So the mob was involved in the assassination. Secret Service, you had the Dallas police, you had FBI with Hoover right there up. You had the military industrial complex, you had the oil tycoons, and you had the CIA big time, and also Israeli interest in the background as well. So it was a massive, unholy alliance of rogue elements, very brutal forces that made a statement that day. I claim that it was a coup d'etat that happened in Dealey Plaza that day.
You bet
and
it was.
The forces that took over that day are still in power positions This is the thing. This is why these things are so important to look into. For instance, you had the paymaster of Operation 40. Guess who? A young man called George Herbert Walker Bush. He was the paymaster funneling the funds into this group of assassins. Incredible, incredible, absolutely incredible. And Nixon was right there also involved in the whole thing. Johnson, Lyndon Johnson, big time involved, not in the team itself, but very much involved in the assassination and so on. But also, when they took out Robert Kennedy, 68, just a month after Martin Luther King, where there were also some of these people involved in the planning and so on, there was one man called David Morales. He was at the Ambassador Hotel together with other people from Naval Intelligence and so on, taking care, overseeing the assassination of Robert Kennedy, which was absolutely, had nothing to do with Sirhan Sirhan, absolute patsy. And how do I know he's a patsy? Well, for one thing, the revolver he was using had eight bullets in it, but about 13 shots were fired.
Yeah.
Okay, then you have shots.
It's a magic gun because the shots came from different parts of the room, too.
It's incredible. I mean, but Sirhan was at no point, he was no closer than, I don't know what that is in American, like a meter and 30 centimeters, something like that, and straight from the front, firing at Robert Kennedy, hitting other people, hitting the ceiling and doorpost and stuff like that. But where did Robert Kennedy got hit from? What wounds killed him? There were three shots that really hit him. One that passed very close, but three shots hit him, all of them from the back and to the right. So it's not to be a conspiracy theorist, which is a term that was created after the JFK assassination to use against people like myself, because as soon as you say theory, there's a doubt, and you can so easily turn that into a tinfoil hat. So anyway, like my daughter, she's 11 years old. I tell her the story. She said, but Dad, there must have been a second shooter behind him to the right. Yes. And here we have somebody sitting, rotting away his whole life, Sirhan Sirhan, together with so many other people that are there, innocent, being blamed for these crimes that they had nothing to do with. He was part of the operation, but unknowingly, he was one of these so-called mind-controlled people that are sometimes there not to carry out the assassination itself, because that is more or less always done by professionals. Most of the time, triangular fire, multiple shooters, multiple getaway cars, and so on. But the guy, the fall guy, like Mark Chapman or Sirhan Sirhan, they're just left behind to take the fall for it and rot away in hell, in prison for it. But anyway, this David Morales that was there at the Ambassador Hotel, he was also together with Felix Rodriguez, which is another member, key member in Operation 40. He was sent down to Bolivia to track down Che Guevara, who was Fidel Castro's close associate, and kill him. So the actual killer of Che Guevara was David Morales. And Felix Rodriguez, if he's still alive, I'm not sure, but he carries around Che Guevara's wristwatch on his arm every single day, very proud of what he's done. Anyway, so these people, like also John Lennon, for instance, we were talking about Mark Chapman, the guy that was blamed for this assassination. The doorman at this evening, he jumped in extra this night only, as far as I've been able to find out. He had connection with the CIA and so on. It was an old, nice-looking gentleman in his, I think, early, late 60s and something like that, a bit bald, glasses, nice smile. When John Lennon and Yoko Ono came to the Dakota building, Yoko Ono left the limo, they started walking towards the house, and John came some 5-6 meters behind her when suddenly shots were fired. John were hit and several times, went down, started crawling into the building, and then was taken to the hospital where he died. But all the shots of the nowadays, the papers from the autopsy aren't found anymore, but I've seen them before. All of the shots were hit. He was hit straight from the left, so close that some of the holes were so close it was hard to see if it were more than one bullet. So Mark Chapman was standing back several meters and to the right, and the shots were fired straight from, more or less point blank, from the left. So who was standing there? The doorman. So who was he? And his name is José Perdomo. And for 10 years, he was the highest highest commanding officer of Operation 40. What are the chances that one of the absolute top assassins in the U.S. secret history of absolute mayhem was a doorman that night standing at the exact position where the shots were fired from? Coincidence?
No. I think it's an absolute coincidence. It's just not an accident. It's a wonderful coincidence when you put it together like this. Isn't it amazing? Go ahead. You go ahead. This is...
No, please.
Well, it's just that it gets so... Once the first domino begins to fall, it just becomes really easy to understand how all of this was orchestrated, who the players were, and then after that, it's pretty easy to deduce who had the interest in having this happen, these various assassinations, who stood to gain from it. And it's amazing.
That is the key question you need to ask yourself. Whatever happens, if there's a terror act, if there's a mass shooting, if whatever it is, ask yourself, before I react, before I go into, oh my God, it's another one, we're under attack, before you go into that, take a step back, deep breath, and just ask yourself, who benefits from me reacting like this? Or if it's an assassination, look at the historical things that are going on at the time. Who benefits from this person not being in the game anymore? And that will lead you towards, there's always a reason. And the assassinations is very often a last resort. When they cannot come up with anything else to destroy that person's credibility or career or whatever, they hit him. And sometimes they do it in plain sight, like with JFK, right out in the open, in front of cameras, everything, just to show and send a message of absolute terror and fear to the rest of people in power position, saying, we can get anyone at any time, so you better shut up and back down in line.
Oh, absolutely.
That is the message that are being sent out. And this is also why very often when you see these big conspiracies, they are almost always followed by like a second conspiracy of silence. It's the official story or silence. People like myself will be met by silence or taken care of. I've written this book, Coup d'etat in slow motion. It's almost 1,000 pages. So if it was the Patsy, all of these 1,000 pages, and I don't like writing, is absolute lies and taken out of thin air. I've tried to get this published. I don't know how many, well, it was finished in 2001. So no one has wanted to even look at it when it comes to a publisher, you know. And a while ago, I sent out an email to 1,100 media contacts in Denmark and Sweden saying, this is the book, here I am, I've spent 30 years of my life finding out this thing. Once and for all, why don't we join forces and just expose what actually happened? Maybe some of what I come up with is not correct, then please help correct it. But I will be here. I can send you the book as a free PDF file. I'm here for your assistance. Let us solve this national trauma once and for all. Do you know how many replies I got from 1,100 emails sent out? I got two.
Yeah.
And it resulted in one interview in Denmark. And you ask me why I'm not proud to call myself a journalist. I mean, what is going on? I'm amazed. How can it be so controlled? It is stunning. It is stunning. And one time I used to make music for TV4 in Sweden, and there was, at that time, I was part of a small little group called the Private Investigators that were made absolute fun of in media. They were just calling us tinfoil hats and whatever. But this was a small group of mostly elder men who was just very, very concerned about what had happened right in the in front of the nation's eyes, and nobody reacting to that it was actually, like my book is called, a coup d'etat in slow motion. It happens, the shots were fired and the coup d'etat went like this in slow motion so that people, not even the Swedes, would react, you know. So anyway, in 1996, he was killed 10 years earlier. There was a German documentary called Murder in Stockholm, you can find it on YouTube, that were aired in Germany, Italy and France and named the best documentary of the year. So when I saw that, I thought, wow, this is amazing. They were really pointing out some of the people involved and many other things that was totally opposite the official story. I thought, this is amazing. So I got a VHS copy and I went to a program that, since I was working there, I could sort of get inside access to a company called Cold Facts. It's one of the most respected, it's like 60 Minutes almost, like, but in Swedish, the Swedish version, something like that. Anyway, so I went up to one of the guys and I said, listen, I have a video cassette here of a program. It's about the assassination of Olof Palme. And I said, I would be most happy to just leave it here for you to watch. So he said, what's it about? Is it about the official man who has been sentenced for the killing? I said, no, it's about a lot much larger picture, including Swedish police and so on. So please have a look and let's, you know, do with it what you want. And he said, thank you, but no thank you. And I said, I'm sorry, I don't understand. And he said, no, we have a company policy here saying that there are so many different theories that so we had to focus on one, and that's the official story, you know. So other than that, thank you, but no thank you. And I was like, but I'm sorry, I'm getting confused here. You are said to be one of the best journalists in Sweden. I'm giving you a program that has been awarded in three different countries for best documentary. I say, here, watch it. It will take like 45 minutes of your precious lifetime. If it's crap, put it in the bin. But if it's something of value for the Swedish people and the rest of the world, maybe consider airing it. He said, no, thank you, goodbye. And the door was closed. Mind-blowing, in my opinion. Mind-blowing. And this is how you come, at least I've come to a point where I see that it's not the individual journalist. This is controlled on a totally different level, where the editors and the chief editors are part of groups like the Bilderberg group, or, for instance, in Sweden, all chief editors do their military duty in the psychological defense. It's called the psychological defense, whose main focus is to direct the nation in what they think is the best direction. Meaning, you know, don't mess with things that they're involved in. Cover up whatever and just point in a direction where people will just wander along looking more or less happy, not understanding what's going on. I tell you one thing, every time there is a document where it says national security on it, I would say it's their security. They are trying to cover their own butts. They don't want the normal people to look into their things, what they are doing, what all of these things that are being played in the background, and we are just like asleep, not understanding what's going on, just feeling confused and, oh my God, the whole world is filled with crazy whatever. But I don't know about you, John, but I live in a beautiful, fantastic world that where it is like a beautiful body, totally alive and thriving, but with a cancer growth. And this cancer growth has like an octopus with tentacles going in all different vital areas of life, totally trying to destroy us. So just like with a cancer growth, you need to open up, even though it's smelly and painful and dangerous, you need to open it up and remove it for the body to be able to heal.
Yeah. You know, Ole, it bothers me a little bit that we must default to the small percentage of people who participated in the American Revolution. And, you know, 240 years later, we're going, did we really declare independence? and I default to the, but it was a small group, you know, now it, situation got away from us later, that's obvious, but in the same way that Margaret Mead said, never doubt that a small group of dedicated individuals can change the world, indeed, it's the only thing that has, you know, it's a little unsettling when that woman approached, I want to say it was Franklin, to ask, what kind of government, what government have you given us? Oh, we're going to install a demonically possessed monarch. Okay. You know, you just have to say to hell with these people that won't engage, because somebody has to do this. Just like this horrible geriatric hippie, my words, not yours, this horrible geriatric hippie, this socialist idiot, Bernie Sanders, is now thrown in behind Hillary Clinton, who is a known criminal. 56% of people polled say they're not happy with the fact that she wasn't indicted, but Director Comey may have a couple of things up his sleeve. I hope so. We spoke recently with Charles Hortel on this program, and then the radio adjunct this past Saturday night from 10 to midnight, in case everybody's not wise to it, Central Time on KLIF 570 out of Dallas. We talked about the Clinton Foundations. And hell, by the time he's finished talking, it's in the tens of billions of dollars. So my question was, since her fingerprints are on those guns that caused that whole Benghazi fiasco, I wonder if that foundation has contributed money to the development and otherwise funding the initiative of ISIS, since the U.S. got all bent out of shape when Vlad Putin started blowing them up, and we know they stole the oil out of Syria, we know they brokered it out of Turkey, and we know it went to the Western allies. So, man, I wish you could pull out your magic microscope and just point it toward, I'll try and be diplomatic, and point it toward Hillary. That would be extraordinary.
I tell you, Hillary, I've been tracking her down for years, her and dear William. I mean, the body count that follows these people, incredible. I mean, when you look at people like the Bush family or Clinton, or I must say, I would say that all the president that has followed the death of JFK belongs to the same brutal, brutal death machine, including Obama, where the only thing they are is a different pretty cover that works at that time of history. That's the only difference. It was a brutal machine of death and destruction that took over that day in Dealey Plaza, and they are still thriving, going faster than ever. And when you look at these people like Hillary, I mean, or Bush Sr., not Boy George, but it's that whole Bush family, and so many of the other people in that top level, they are super, 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 I don't know how many times I can repeat this word, super criminals on a level that is, sometimes I feel my brain wants to melt down when I see what they get away with. I mean, we're talking mass murderers, drug dealers, con artists. I mean, it is incredible. And I don't understand how people don't see it. It's, but to get back to the more positive point, is that I believe, you say we're few, I say, when I compare 30 years ago when I started and now, my God, the awakening is incredible, incredible. At the same time, there's so many people that feels that something is wrong there, and they're under so much pressure from different places. So they're pumping, the emotional limit is being pushed. And the people behind these operations, they're very aware of, they can't move too fast because they will have a revolution on their hand. But if they make too slow, too many people will wake up, and they can't push us down in total poverty so that we starve, because as soon as people starve, you have a revolution. They will chop you up. So they need to keep people not starving, but at the same time poor as hell and with, covered in debt. But just like, I sometimes feel, it's just like, you know, you have the Hoover Dam, all of this water behind it just pushed up against this wall that is blocking all type of normal life and compassion and inspiration and creativity is just being blocked like this and covered up with concrete so that nobody knows that it's even there. But what I aim at is to, I try to focus on one part. I mean, these are the false flag, the terror activities, and major top political assassinations, because they are so crucial in this whole thing. So I just try to, like with a hammer, just keep knocking at the same point, bum, 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 bum. And sooner or later, I and many other like yourself, it will crack. And I think it's gone. When it cracks, it will go like in one big and I think it's going to happen pretty soon. This is why they're ramping up the numbers of these false flags and all. And the quality of it is like, oh my God, come on, guys. Some feeling for quality, or have some kind of a pride in what you're doing. It's just crap, the thing they're pulling off. The same, the same, the same. And I must say that I truly believe that what we're seeing is like a Rocky Horror show on global tour. The same crisis actors, the same directors, the same lighting people, camera crew, the same marketing agency, the same military bouncers and controllers of this group being flown from country to country in army planes, landing on NATO or American air bases, then being transported in buses with local help with the logistics, housing, feeding, all of these type of things, to carry out just a new show. So this is why I've been doing a lot of research into, you know, when comparing faces and so on, and background actors and so on, in Sydney, as in Ottawa, as in Copenhagen, as in Paris, as in San Bernardino, as in, oh God, there's so many of them. And we're getting there where we're starting to see, whoops, same person in Boston, as in Sandy Hook, as in a mass shooting in New Mexico, as in the Oregon standoff, as in here, there, everywhere. They use the same people. And so it's the same people running around in balaclavas as a SWAT team in Paris, as in Ottawa, as in Sydney, as in so. I am convinced, but I can't prove it totally yet. But I spoke to a friend of mine, Chip Tatum. He's a CIA whistleblower, 25-year
yeah, we know
deep cover agent. You know Chip?
Yes.
Oh, excellent, excellent. I honor this man. He has a horrific past, and he's doing everything he can to redeem himself, giving us incredible insights from the inside of the belly of the beast. So I highly respect him. But I spoke to him about this thing. Is it possible that this is what we're seeing? And he's, it's not only possible, it's plausible. He truly believes that as well. So, and if I keep ranting here, I just want to say, for instance, why are these shooters so often dressed so similar to the SWAT teams that then move in? Yeah, the reason why, and why do they wear balaclavas? Not the shooters, but the SWAT teams. Mm. One of the reasons, they say it's for their protection. I say, what about the protection of normal people? What is the difference between the so-called terrorists nowadays and the SWAT teams? They just appear from nowhere, and we have no idea who they are, what they're doing, and so on. But anyway, normally in these operations, what I see is the shooters go in, they do the job. These are people, most of the time, contracted from private contractors or taken from the Gladio network, Gladio B, Gladio network, also called Stay Behind in some countries. Skilled killers that go in, do the job, and then the SWAT team comes in, and the only thing the killers do is they hide for like 15 minutes, the SWAT team comes in, then they put on a balaclava as well, and they move out with the SWAT team. Gone. Disappears. So you've got, for instance, if you compare the description of the shooters at the Bataclan in Paris and all these cafes, the description of these shooters and the San Bernardino shooting that followed just a week or so afterwards, it's identical. These are the same people that were used as shooters.
Let's see. Now, refresh our memories, starting with me. Joe Cox and Anna Lind.
Yeah.
Who are these people?
Who they are?
Yeah, their names are extraordinarily familiar, but I can't connect it with the subject matter.
Okay, Joe Cox. The thing is
Joe Cox, the minister over there.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And who's Anna?
Anna Lindh was the Swedish foreign minister that was stabbed.
Gotcha, of course. Okay, sorry. My bad.
She was murdered and died on 9/11/2003. They love these dates. But what they do, the powers behind these structures, that is also the structure behind the European Union and many of these other power structures that are there for us, they say, but it's not. They're there to control us. But when there are a referendum or an election in a country, an important one for these powers, and they cannot get the population to vote the way they want them, just by logic and propaganda, they go emotional. So they find a victim, and they go for women to get the emotions going. So they find someone that is a symbol for what they want. So the population wants, for instance, in England, they want it out, Brexit. Britain exit, Brexit. In Sweden, it was about the euro being becoming the new currency in Sweden instead of the krona. And they couldn't get the population to vote for that. So they hit Anna Lindh, who was an icon for the euro. So many voters said, oh my God, out of respect and sympathy for this poor woman, who was the mother of two, both of them the same age, more or less, this mother of two, almost looked identical or similar, beautiful women. When they were killed, stabbed, both of them, and shot, then the population, major part of the population, changed their way of voting out of sympathy. And in Sweden, it was almost so that they got the euro. It was so close. And here in England, Brexit 2 days before this happened, and still England voted out. The same, it was 2 days before the election in Sweden, the euro, and they failed there as well. In the Madrid bombings, where several trains, there were 10 different train bombs that went off, was just a few days before the election, doing the same thing. In Holland, there was a politician called Pim Fortuyn that would be the new president. And just 9 days before the election, boom, he was killed. It is standard operation. This is how they do when they don't have any other options. They go emotional or they take care of that person. So,
you know, it's
the same.
Ole, I'll tell you, it's a damn shame when a man can't keep his murders separated. You know what I mean? There's so much of it going on now. So now, with Jo Cox, where she's concerned. You know, this is what happens to traitors or whatever. And the guy, I mean, how can these idiots just run around shooting and stabbing women like this, just murdering them in the street?
They don't. You look at the crime scene. I totally do not believe that she was murdered.
Is that a fact? Is that what you're getting at with all this? You don't think she was dead?
You look at the crime scene, okay? No blood. This is a standard thing. She was stabbed multiple times and shot 3 times, as far as I remember.
Yeah.
No blood whatsoever. Then there was one older guy that stepped in and defended her, they say. He was stabbed as well. But when you look at the identity, as far as I've been able to track down, I'm not totally sure, but it seems like he died in 2013. Slight problem. Then you have the guy who they claim did it, who is totally not into politics whatsoever, a little bit of a loner, not totally peaceful guy, and with tattoos on his arms. Okay, so you see, they filmed the arrest of this guy. And there's this police car that pulls up, and two police officers jump him. No blue lights, no sirens, no nothing. The guy, there's no struggle, there's no adrenaline, there's no thing pumping, you know. You can watch it on YouTube. And then, within seconds, eight other vehicles arrive. Only one with blue lights, no sirens, no adrenaline, no nothing. Just pulls up in the street. People come out, they don't even go walk over to the guy they just arrested. And when you take it frame by frame by frame and check out the arms of the guy they arrest, he does not have tattoos. But the guy who they blame it for has tattoos on his forearms.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know, it's this type of thing where you just go...
Well, let me ask you this now. What do you think, if she wasn't murdered, where is she? In the Bavarian mountains somewhere or what?
This is the interesting thing, because when you look at these operations, you need to look at it from a higher point of view. This woman As far as I know, I had never heard of her before.
Me either.
Jo Cox. No one had heard of her. She'd been in Parliament for about a year. There's hardly any videos of her at all, doing anything at any place, as far as I know. Her husband was involved in some, or accused from some, being involved in some pedophile trafficking. That's one thing. Okay. But otherwise than that, I had never seen her name. And also, please understand that agencies like the CIA, MI6, MI5, and so on have thousands and thousands and thousands of employees. How many do you know? What are they doing? They've got massive budgets. And also, they're masters of infiltrating. You know, so where did this woman come from? This is the thing with many of these victims in Bataclan and so on. You see, oh my God, 52 dead, 58, 72. Then you start looking into it. I've been looking, you know, I've been on grave sites. I've been trying to track down families. I've been on the internet. I've been in archives. Again and again and again, I find it's a person with a very short paper trail. Created identities, phantom identities used in that operation, and then boom, the next operation over here, so that people get diverted. Do not put a focus into looking for these. And so when you see her family, Jo Cox family, when they talk about this woman, this is a daughter and a sister that has just been stabbed multiple times and shot. I would be upset. I would be a wreck if that had happened. These people have what is called duping delight. It's with all these false flags, turn down when witnesses are being interviewed, turn down the volume and look at the facial expression. Most of them will have a smile. Oh, my dad got his head chopped off by ISIS. Smile. It's called duping delight. It's a psychological term for people who know that they're manipulating and are enjoying it. And you will see it recurs so many times. Sandy Hook, Aurora, you name it, you have these people smiling. And then when you track them down, go back, go back, go back. Many of them have a background in really poor acting because they can't use the famous ones, you know, because they would be too easily recognized. So they have to use really crap actors, and this is what we see again in Orlando, for instance. So many of these people, including Omar Martin, was an actor. He played himself in this film called The Big Fix. You can see him there. And then as soon as that, when we went open with that, every time we go live with these things, it sort of gets erased. If you go now, he was on this IMDb, I think it's called. It's a website for actors where you can see what they've been into, what films and so on. And always when things like this happen, I do screenshots, you know, because I know from experience within hours it's going to be erased. And sure enough, boom, there it went. So the film that is now, he claimed that he was in, you can't find it anymore. Or maybe you can, but the database, that film got erased and so on. And also, the thing is, when you look at Sandy Hook, when you look at many of these other things, nowadays with the internet, since a lot of things are based on databases, when you upload stuff, it gets registered and so on. This has become a major problem because these operations are quite big. And for instance, many of the photos from Sandy Hook, they were uploaded before the event took place. Many of them, and for instance, in Sandy Hook, one of the children that was killed there, claimed to be killed there, Noah Posner, 6 years old, he was also killed. He was one of the victims 2 years later in the mass shooting in Peshawar in Pakistan. The exact same photo being used as one of the victims. It even came to a point where a colleague of mine confronted Noah Posner's claimed father, asking what the hell is going on, and he didn't even want to answer questions or anything. Wouldn't you think that a dad, if he suddenly discovered that his child, who he thought was dead, had been living in Pakistan and then got killed identically again, exactly more or less 2 years later on the date. We're looking at a theater. We're looking at a theater play where they play ping pong with our emotions to get away with their extremely criminal agenda. And many times also in so many of these things, they put up these foundations. Oh, this woman has been killed in this, and they raise millions of dollars. You check out the date. When were these registered? Well, very often before the crime even took place.
Let me ask you this. Charlie Hebdo thing. We saw the AK round bounce right off the sidewalk. He didn't shoot that guy. And
he's doing fine. But I totally agree with you. You say the
AK-47
round. A ricochet, but it was not. If you go frame by frame by frame, you will see that the actual smoke, it goes upward in a right angle. It's a small little smoke canister he's got in his left hand.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah, oh, interesting. Go frame by frame. I can send you the footage.
I wish you would.
For sure. Anything you want, John. Anything you want, I'm here.
Listen, anything that you think that would be useful to further your cause and the cause of exposing these criminals, we would receive it with open arms, and I really mean that. Now, listen, I'm sorry I seem to be a little slow on the draw today. I think it's because it's Monday, and the you know, these idiots with Black Lives Matter. Oh boy, do we ever have something on that? But anyway, it's almost like the whole town here is sedated, and I've gotten kind of pulled into that mindset a little bit. And there seems to be just this. And I'm not trying to make excuses. You know, I screw up as a screw up. If I screw up something, I just say, "Yeah, I screwed up. I did it. He didn't do it. I did it." But what about this thing? This massacre. This so-called massacre at Brussels. And then the airport at Istanbul. I mean, what is all of this? To me, it looked to me like, I'm just going to run this past you. It looked to me like Erdogan was trying to distance himself from ISIS by having an attack in Istanbul. Am I close? Do you agree or not so much?
I would say that so many of these things are connected. You had attacks connected in 2015. It was the Charlie Hebdo. Then right after that, they had, no, sorry, there was one first at the, what was the place? Just outside, the Intel plant outside Dublin was targeted one. That was followed by Charlie Hebdo. Then came the Copenhagen shootings. Then came November 13th shootings. The thing was that it's so bizarre because they leave like little small clues for us to see or not see in these horrendous crimes, claimed crimes. And why they do that, I don't know, but I'm very aware of it. So I'm getting extremely close into all of these things, trying to find what is the clue for the next time. So I humbly believe that I've been able to stop at least one or two of these origins. One of them was the shooting in Copenhagen, where I went out publicly on international radio, Dr. Ken Barrett's show, one of them, and said, it's going to happen here around that train station, time of day, and so on. It did not. We went out live. Nothing happened. So I thought, thank God I was wrong. At least nobody got hurt. It happened exactly 1 month on the hour later.
Good Lord.
And then the question is, like there was a lot of radio programs saying, but how the hell could you know? And I said, it's just because once you see how they operate, they are on a very strict timeline. They can't improvise. Once you get the hang of how they think, you can start predicting these things and also see the clues. So my question is like, okay, radio programs were interested. How I knew? Why did not the Danish security police contact me saying, how the hell did you know that it would happen there? You must have information, or you must be part of this crime. I heard nothing. I even went on location. I went straight after the shooting. I went from Spain to Copenhagen. I took one group while the whole operation was still there. Shit scary, I tell you. I took one group around. It's on YouTube. We walked everywhere with these different things that happened, and I totally debunked it in front of camera, in front of the police, all of these things. Defusing it. That's the idea. But I want to say, do you remember the Bataclan shooting where there's only one photo that has come out from inside the Bataclan where they claimed that, I can't remember, was it 89 victims they claimed died in there, that four shooters went in, shot for 10, 15 minutes. I mean, the hitting rate must have been really bad. only 80 victims, and then blew themselves up. Oh, no, sorry, they did know. Oh, yes, they did. Four did. No, three did. No, two did. No, one did. Keeps changing these things. Anyway, so where was I? Yeah, the only photo that has come out from that shooting, claimed shooting, is where you can see there's 25 bodies on the floor in there. Have you seen that? And around it, around these bodies, I can send you these images as well. Maybe you can post them together with the show.
Please.
There is, it looks like somebody had taken a massive big brush, like one meter wide, and painted in blood, in like a heart shape around these bodies. When you zoom in on, really try and see these photos, you will see that they're not real bodies. They're body, what is it called? Kappa cadavers, I think they're called. You know, the angles of the hip and the legs. You can't move legs like that even if you're dead. So very often, very early on, you will see that these are not real dead bodies. There's also very, very satanic undertones in that whole thing. Really bizarre. And on the floor, there's a golden death mask lying very obvious next to the bodies and so on. But that, I thought that this heart shape was that they wanted to say it was in Paris. It was some symbolic thing, you know, the center of Romans, the city of Romans, and so on. But then the Brussels airport happened, and when I saw the logo of the Brussels airport, I almost fell off my chair, because that is identical to the thing that they painted on the floor, the logo of the Brussels airport, and it says Brussels in the heart of Europe, or the heart of Europe. Okay, so they hit that one next. Then, so I was, when I went into this one, I was so alert for looking out for clues. What would be the next? We need to stop the next one. So among all of these photos that was released of the things that did not match up at all, when you look into the witness testimonies, it's just like, it does not match up at all, and it keeps changing and all of these things. But anyway, there was one cafe in the nearby where some of the explosions took place, they claim. It was called Café Lille. And on the wall behind it, you just see furniture and devastation and so on. But on the wall behind it, there was a wall painting of the Eiffel Tower horizontal. And I was like, what the hell is that? So weird. Why would you paint the Eiffel Tower horizontal? So I checked out, and the painting was there before the attack, that's for sure. But I just felt, whoa, this could very well be one of those. So I went out big time. Once again, Veterans Today and Dr. Kevin Barrett, helped me put it out there. As you know, you need to act very fast. So we did that. And then very recently, I've seen that ISIS claims to have released a new video, where in that video is exactly how they bombed the Eiffel Tower. So I've got an image that I can send you of the ISIS version of the Eiffel Tower like that, and the Brussels one with the Eiffel Tower like that. And Kevin Barrett, who is married to a Muslim by choice, he married a woman, a beautiful woman from Morocco, and he was on his way to or from Morocco and landed in Paris just hours before this November 13 massacre took place, claimed massacre. Anyway, so when I told him this, he said, it's so odd that you mentioned this, because he said that when he was looking for some postcards to send to friends from Paris, and he said there was this postcard with, do you know these type of postcards, really cute, when where you can, if you change the angle, the image changes. You know the type of, it's like the dog, if it's of a dog and then you change the angle and suddenly the dog barks and so on. Different. And he said there were postcards like that of the Eiffel Tower with a commercial airline flying into the Eiffel Tower. And if you change the angle, then it was an old airplane, you know, like a double-decker. And he said, when you say that, it's so odd. But this is how they put it out there, right in our face. And today, I just want to say, today is, what date is it? It's the 11th of July. And today, they've shut down the Eiffel Tower. So I'm just saying, if anything happens, please notice that this was recorded before. It's the big final in the European Football Championship, I think, and so on. So if anything happens to the Eiffel Tower, please let this be noted.
Okay, let me ask you this, Ole. Do not tell us, do not say where you are, and I'm not going to either.
Oh, God, I'm happy
to No. We need you. I don't want to do that. But how is it? How's the standard of living over there? Is it pretty good? Don't say where you are. You like it? Go ahead.
I'm outside Estepona in the south of Spain. I'm not hiding. You know, I refuse to live in fear. So I've come to a point where some of my fellow researchers as well, we know that we put our life on the line. But once you've accepted that this might become the end of you, you can act fearless in another way and also appreciate life in a different way. So I'm not hiding at all. And I also feel that that is my protection, to be totally open and vulnerable, and also stand in total compassion, forgiveness, and love of live life. You know, this is the whole thing. I'm not here for revenge or hate or anything like that. I just want this madness to stop. Stop messing with us. Life is designed to be fantastic and beautiful. Look at a butterfly, look at a flower, you can see the perfection of all of it. And then we live in what most people would describe as hell, just because a small little group is messing us around. It really is like a serial killer in a big capital. One person that can keep the whole city in fear. Same thing here, small little group, they're in the thousands, absolute cowards, with the only talents they have is to manipulate, lie, steal, and kill. Not nice people. And the rest of us just bending over. We are in the billions. They are in the thousands. It is a joke. It is an absolute joke. And we are doing it to ourselves. This is the mad thing. Because these people, most of them, I mean, look at Henry Kissinger, David Rockefeller. I mean, they wouldn't even be able to do anything then. Send an email on a computer. And then yet again we say, oh, but they got all this high-tech weaponry and they got drones and they can kill us and surveillance. They have nothing. We are doing it to ourselves. Without us, if we just say, no, thank you, but no, I'm not doing it, it all comes to a stop. So I would say, look yourself in the mirror and see, are you who are listening in any way or form or part of this machine? And many of us are. Many of us are. Anyone who works for FEMA camps or in the so-called defense industry, I mean, really, defense in the U.S., who it's called attack industry.
Yeah, it's got nothing to do with it. Well, they can't call it the Department of Offense, can they?
the rest of the world is in defense against you, I must say, it is. So to talk about defense is just a joke. But all of this thing of being proud of being able to run a drone or a surveillance system, whatever it is, or installing toilets and FEMA camp, whatever your role is, please consider it and see this is not for the good of all of us. It's good for a few people and their incredible greed that never gets filled up. And also, these beautiful people that get totally pulled into the army thinking that they're going to do the right thing, liberate countries and what fighting for democracy. And so it is absolute bullshit. Mm-hmm. They are using you as enforcers, brutal tools of death and destruction. And they could not care less about you as an individual.
Yeah, the proof of that is look how the veterans are treated when they come back after service. There's 20 of them a day now. It was 22. It's dropped to 20 a day or killing themselves. So, yeah, I get you.
And why are they killing themselves? This is so heartbreaking because they have soiled their soul against innocent people in innocent countries due to total brainwash and not being aware of what they got themselves into.
Yeah, and they demoralize them further by having them wear high heel shoes just so they can see what it's like for the women. Now they're pulling transgenders into it. Now women can be drafted, and I predict you'll see a draft next year. I also, Vlad Putin is on fire. He's saying, you know, wake up, media. How is it you cannot understand that the world is being pulled into an irreversible direction? I'll tell you, I have come to I love my country, but I absolutely despise this government. We have to hook up again soon. I don't want to let you go, but I got to. But look, stay online for just a second, because I just want to chat with you for a few seconds. So don't cut the connection yet. Everybody listen, his website is Light on Conspiracies. He's not. He's actually heavy on conspiracies, but he's talking about putting light on the darkness, okay? Lightonconspiracies.com, and his books are Coup d'etat in slow motion, part 1 and 2, Shadow of Tears, Re-Mind Me, and Yolanda Yogapanda. All right. Ole, thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure speaking with you. I'm not kidding either. And stand by again. I want to chat with you for a second. All right.
My absolute pleasure.
All right. Take care out there. All right. Stand by, everybody. More to come.